Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and a very warm welcome to the Dr. Reddy's Q3 FY17 earnings conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I'm now glad to hand the conference over to Mr. Shaunak Savla. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Very good morning and good evening to all of you, and thank you for joining us today for the Dr. Reddy's earnings call for the third quarter of fiscal 2017. Earlier during the day, we have released our results, and the same are also posted on our website. We are conducting a live webcast of this call, and a transcript shall be available on our website soon. Just a reminder, the discussion and analysis in this call will be based on the IFRS consolidated financial statements. To discuss the business performance and outlook, we have the leadership team of Dr. Reddy's, comprising Mr. Saumin Chakraborty, our CFO, Abhijit Mukherjee, our COO, and Mr. Anil Namboodiripad, who is the head of our Propaquizafop business and the investor relations team. Please note that today's call is a copyrighted material of Dr. Reddy's and cannot be rebroadcast or attributed in press or media outlets without the company's express written consent. Before we proceed on the call, I would like to remind everyone that the safe harbor language contained in today's press release also pertains to the conference call and the webcast. After the end of the call, in case if any additional clarifications are required, please feel free to get in touch with the investor relations team. Now, I would like to turn the call over to Mr. Saumin Chakraborty, our CFO.
Thank you, Shaunak. Greetings to everyone. Let me begin with the financial highlights. For this section, all the amounts are translated into US dollar at the convenient translation rate of rupees 67.92, which is the rate as of 30th December 2016. Consolidated revenues for the quarter are rupees 3,706 crores or $546 million and grew 3% sequentially. The performance has been mixed across the markets. While revenue contribution from Europe and emerging markets have registered sequential growth, that from our North America generic business and proprietary products have largely remained flat. On a year-on-year basis, overall revenues declined by 7%. Revenues from our global generic segment are $451 million and PSI segment are $80 million. Consolidated gross profit margin for the quarter is 59.1%. Gross margin for global generics and PSI were at 64.1% and 28.3% respectively. Sequentially, there has been a marked improvement in the gross margin profile of the business. SG&A spend, including amortization for the quarter, is $167 million, a decrease by 6% year-on-year. After normalization of the Venezuela base effect and the settlement charge paid to Novartis with respect to zoledronic acid, there is a marginal increase which is largely attributable to normal salary increments, headcount, and other costs. Sequentially also, after adjusting for the NPPA charge that we took last quarter, there is no major variance. We continue to explore avenues to optimize this spending. R&D expense for the quarter were at $73 million, representing 13.4% to revenues and is in line with management estimates. As discussed earlier, we have initiated further development activities on the recently in-licensed in-process R&D assets from Genocode and Eisai, as well as the acquired ANDA filings from Teva, which has incrementally added to the R&D expense. EBITDA for the quarter stands at $129 million, which is 23.7% of the revenue. So better gross margin profile and controlled SG&A and R&D spending aided the improvement in the EBITDA margin. During the quarter, we generated 77 million of cash flows from operations. Our net debt to equity ratio is 0.31 as on 31st December 2016. Effective tax rate for the quarter is 20.6%. Key balance sheet highlights are as follows. Our operating working capital increased by $69 million during this quarter due to the new product inventory built up and increase in receivables in few geographies. We would continually focus on optimizing the working capital cycle. Capital expenditure for the quarter was at $44 million. The foreign currency cash flow hedges for the next 6 months in the form of derivatives and loans for US dollars are approximately $135 million. Largely hedged around the range of rupees 67.6 to rupees 70.4 to the dollar. In addition, we have balance sheet hedges of $251 million. We also have foreign currency cash flow hedge of 300 million rubles at the rate of rupees 1.08 to the ruble and 1.5 million euro largely hedged around rupees 75 to rupees 82.05 to the euro maturing over next 3 months. With this, I now request Abhijit to take through the key business highlights.
Thank you, Sarvan. Greetings to everybody and welcome on the earnings conference call. Overall, there has been a marginal growth in top line on a sequential basis. We continue to face headwinds in the US business. Delay in approvals of our major launches coupled with erosion of the base business has been a cause of concern. On a positive note, currencies across emerging market geographies have stabilized with crude. The business continues to grow on the back of stable macroeconomy and institution business launches. Let me take you through each business to discuss the performance and some key themes. Reference to financial numbers will be in respective local currencies. Our North America revenues are at $246 million. While we continue to face incremental competitive pressure, we have managed to hold on to our market shares across critical products at an overall level. During the quarter, we have launched 5 relatively small products, most of them being partnered assets. The fourth quarter, however, is unlikely to benefit from any sizable launch. This, coupled with sequential buying pattern and continued competitive pressure, would likely result in a softer Q4. Additionally, we are facing a temporary supply disruption of one of our mid-sized assets due to technical reasons, which is manufactured at a partnered site. We have already initiated corrective measures to get the product back into the market soon. This will have some financial impact for a quarter or so. Some major launches anticipated in this fiscal year are likely to get deferred to next fiscal. The review of the complex products and subsequent approvals by the agency are moving slower than our expectations. We continue to work with the agency to expedite our approvals. Based on the current visibility, the launch momentum is expected to pick up in the coming year. Overall, we are likely to see 15 plus launches coming through next year. With this traction, we hope to be back to our historical trend of business. We have substantially ramped up our R&D productivity. We have filed 9 ANDAs in this quarter and expect to close the year with a cumulative 20 to 25 filings. Continuing on the pure generics business, our Europe business saw some good launches. Overall, the business looks well poised for profitable growth on the back of key launches and traction in institution business in EU5 countries. On the emerging market front, we are fairly comfortable with the gradual recovery in the marketplace pursuant to the stable macro environment. Specific to this quarter, our business grew 23% sequentially. Russia business grew 11% sequentially in constant currency. The team continues to focus on productivity enhancement and portfolio augmentation. Ex-Russia, the other market performance was in line with our expectations. We are on track to expand our geographic presence through leverage of our institution business portfolio and biosimilars. Commercialization of biosimilars across emerging markets has now started gaining meaningful traction. We remain optimistic of building on this momentum further. Domestic formulation business revenues are 595 crores and grew 2% year-on-year. Normalized for base alignment, demonetization impact, and NLEM notifications, the performance is broadly in line with the expectations. In this quarter, we commercialized two of the in-licensed products under strategic collaboration with Amgen. As a business, we continue to focus on productivity enhancement and portfolio augmentation. PHI business posted revenues of 80 million. The business is gaining traction in emerging markets with healthy margins. CPS business has done well this quarter. On the quality front, as communicated earlier, our warning-letter impacted sites are scheduled to get reaudited during the months of February and March. A substantial remediation work has been put in place from our side. Our application of corrective and preventive actions or CAPAs were not just site-specific, but they were also network-wide and incorporated third-party review and assessments. We believe we have prepared ourselves well for the audit. In the process of implementing the CAPAs, we have made significant progress in enhancing our quality systems and instilling the culture of quality and continuous improvement. That concludes my part. Thank you all, and I would now like to open the floor for Q&A.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone phone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to only use handset while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. We'll take the first question from the line of Neha Manpuria from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Thanks for taking my question. So my first question is on the gross margins. What drove the sequential improvement, particularly given a flat quarter from U.S. and, issues in India?
So, of course, there will be some degree of operating leverage with the level of sales. And we have been, focusing on cost control measures. So in terms of reflection of that in both SG&A and core items will be there. And these we are trying to do systematically, across the organization. In the currency front, there has been definitely some benefit that we are getting. And so, for example, in the constant currency, there is a growth. And actual, you will see a better realization in INR, a functional currency. And last but not the least, our gross margin, which is a weighted average, completely depend on both the business mix as well as specific products, which one, products with a higher gross margin sells higher, that gives us overall weighted gross margin better.
Is it then fair to assume that since, all of the items that you mentioned were pretty much sustainable, that, this margin can continue despite your commentary on fourth quarter being very lean?
It cannot be taken for granted. There could be some fluctuations which can happen. But our endeavor will be there to protect. But anything above 55% is normally our expectation to keep in the gross margin.
Fair enough. Sir, on the U.S. business, your commentary on, approvals being delayed and additional pricing pressure. First, on the pricing pressure, are we seeing, incremental pricing pressure because of the McKesson-Walmart deal, or is this related to some of the products, are products seeing competition? And second, on the approvals, have you seen an increasing incidence of probably CRLs from the U.S. FDA that has led to delay in approvals, which was not initially factored in?
So the first question on price erosion, I think broadly as expected and as being experienced by the industry, we are also facing the same thing. I wouldn't be specific to any merger, but overall channel has consolidated. We had some high value assets. There was competition coming in, and also, you know, some of the launches like Omeprazole bicarbonate, you've seen more people have come in. Some of those have seen some erosion. So, expected and has happened, and, you know, channel consolidation will continue to have margin erosion. On the, you know, relative delay in approval process, yes, I think the, you know, complete response letters overall, if you have followed, the industry is getting a lot. We are having our share. We have been always targeting some of the products which are slightly on the higher end of complexity and hence more clarifications required. So yes, CR letters are coming in and we are addressing those.
Sir, one follow-up on the approval point. By how much would you say your entire approval period has gotten delayed because of the CRL? Would you say, you know, 6 to 9 months, or do you see a longer delay in our approvals?
Asset to asset, case to case. Difficult to put one figure. As you know, the minor CRs from the agency, it's a three-month turnaround from the agency. Major CRs are much longer. So wouldn't be able to place one average figure, but, you know, quarter and a half delay is a fair assumption.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, in order to ensure that the management is able to address questions from all participants, please limit your questions to two per participant. Thank you. We will take the next question from the line of Prakash Agarwal from Axis Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. So just trying to understand your opening comments where you said your working capital has increased in anticipation of new launches, and you continued saying that there has been delay in some of the sizable launches which you're expecting. So could you elaborate more on this, please?
Some I can and some I can't. So broadly, sizable wise, I think we had messaged that we had the imatinib launch scheduled as per you know the deal this quarter. So this was originally from our oncology site, but since you know we had FDA sort of WL, we had shifted in time, and we had you know in a partner site which we had scheduled. We are scheduled for approval more or less as per in our view. But you know one of the recent audits in one of the partner sites, there are questions raised and which throws in a lot of doubt whether this would get approval on the specific day. So we are again trying to see what we can do to mitigate that, maybe bring back to our own side. But so that's one, and there is one more injectable, which is basically a couple of months delay beyond what we were expecting. So these two are the ones I can mention. The smaller ones are there, but it doesn't really matter in those cases.
The receivables have also gone up in some geographies, which will bring it under control by next quarter.
So the inventory buildup was not for US, but for the other markets is what I understand.
No, it includes US. That's what we just clarified. It will always, you know, prepare for a launch in anticipation. See if the approval gets delayed, to that extent inventory built up, you know, doesn't get reduced.
Understood. And secondly, if you could just help us understand the, you know, the competitive landscape of NuvaRing and sublingual Suboxone, which would be large opportunities expected in fiscal 18. Just, you know, just a little bit on if you could help us broad level, like the kind of competition one can expect and the likely timelines.
Yeah, these are complex assets and the competition is likely to be lean, which means the value is well secured, but the timelines are, yes, I mean, these have some questions from the agency being addressed. And as we speak, you know, we are in the process of addressing some of those questions. So there may be some delay in this. These launches could be towards the end of Q4, could be a little later, but we have to remind also that both are in litigation. In case of Novaring, it's, you know, the generics prevailed in the circuit and hence much clearer on that front, but on and also being appealed, but it's at least much clearer. Suboxone has a good position, but beyond that we can't come in because it's in litigation. So these are the challenges, but your question was mainly on competition. We don't not likely to be sort of crowded in the near future.
And timeline, you said Q4 of 18 or 17?
18.
You know, we are talking of fiscal 18 Q4, maybe a little delayed beyond that as well.
Okay, okay. And so,
Prakash, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I would request you to come back in queue for any follow-up question. Thank you. We'll take the next question from the line of Anubhav Agarwal from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Good evening. Swami, sir, just one question, gross margin. Typically, we have seen in the past the injectable product stocking in the U.S. is higher in the December quarter. Would you say that that would have contributed to higher margins in this quarter? I mean, big part of contribution of the delta in global generics?
I will not say that that could be a primary reason.
Okay. And the other question... Sure.
Yeah. In my listing, I had mentioned that we're seeing some traction in emerging market biologics supplies. You know, to an extent, those things also have helped.
Okay. And one question, actually, two questions on SG&A. It's tremendous amount of saving has been made by the company over past few quarters in SG&A. I just want to understand that. Typically, in December quarter, we have seen more promotion happening in some of the, like, in Russian market, just for, is an example. So would you classify that some amount of saving was lower promotion because we, in Russia, for example, we have seen -5% constant currency decline. So would you say that all of the saving in SG&A, what you are showing today, is not hurting revenue at all, and therefore, large part of this is sustainable?
Whenever we focus on... cost rationalization, the primary consideration that it must not impact our business. So while keeping in view the business considerations, we see how we can possibly eliminate any kind of waste, and also focus is both on indirect cost as well as on direct cost. And your direct cost, of course, we also focus beyond procurement also on yield improvement and other aspects. So this is something which we have been trying to drive very systematically across the organization with the required level of incentivization so that there is much more focus.
So would you say that the seasonal promotion which used to happen in some of the emerging markets, that is continuing as at the same level what it was, and large part of savings we are seeing is X of that?
See, there are... marketing expenses, which there are cases where there are more marketing expense than the previous year, which was called for. For example, like Habitrol kind of thing, which you have in USA, or the this year brand acquisitions that we have done, what we do in property products. So that way, marketing and sales is an item for overall SG&A. You know, there have been, newer requirements which have been there. So I would not try to overemphasize, shifting from one quarter to another quarter and all. Whatever is required to be spent on marketing for our business, we continue to spend.
Thank you. We'll take the next question from the line of Manoj Garg from Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good evening to all, and thanks for taking my questions. Abhijit, on the opening remark, you made comment that you are expecting around 15 plus kind of launches in fiscal year 18. Are you considering some of those Tevas assets like Novaring and Suboxone in that 15 plus, or they are over and above that?
Yeah, a few. You know, to be specific, about three. Two I mentioned towards the end of Q4, and there is one earlier, and there are a whole host of other things. The important thing is not 15 plus or, you know, whatever number is, whether it's 20 or 15. Important is how many are meaningful. Actually, it's becoming very clear in your U.S. market, and since you're tracking, it's all important that there would be a few which will internally track as well with to the best extent we can. So those are the important ones, you know.
And sure. So out of those 15, as you rightly said, how much could be, or how many could be the meaningful launches which we are building for the next year?
You know, the ratio is similar for most companies. I think, I guess, would be about, you know, four or five, maybe.
Okay. And the second question is on biosimilar. When, on the R&D day, we have outlined that we are looking around $150 to $200 million kind of revenue from biosimilar portfolio from the emerging markets. Where are we, and how do we see that visibility going forward?
So good traction. Our filings are going on, and there's also a pull from quite a few markets because this is, apart from the revenue, is bringing in, you know, healthcare cost reduction in those markets. It's bring, to a large extent also the affordability issue is getting resolved, and I guess in many of these markets, the markets would expand as it has happened in India. So we feel very excited about this, both from our mission as well as revenue angle. We are putting all efforts. This quarter saw good traction. Q4 also would see reasonable traction on that. Going ahead also will, but only thing, the thing, it's going to be a little lumpy based on, you know, this is not, these are not basically, you know, when some tenders go, we sort of, depending on how we do. So it's not going to be absolutely smooth, but yeah, I mean, Q3, Q4 will continue to have be in the similar zone.
So may I ask one more question, if you permit?
Yeah, please go ahead quickly.
Yeah, so just on the Aloxi, any update on the litigation and any timeline on that?
We are just expecting nothing happened so far.
Sure. Wish you all the best, and that's all for my side.
Thank you. We'll take the next question from the line of Sameer Baisiwala from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Now that you have made you moved the Eisai and Xenoport assets into the clinicals, what do you think would be your ongoing R&D spend on these quarterly or full year basis?
What we earlier alluded to is for the financial year, that is FY17, we'll be spending around $25 million on both these assets combined. So we are sticking to that kind of a, you know, guidance on the spend for this year. Overall, how much will be, I cannot give you that specific as of now. But as and when we have further discussions with the agency and get more, maybe we can come back later. But as on date, $25 million remains very much is the FY17 R&D expense on these two molecules.
Fiscal 18?
I cannot tell you right away.
Okay. And just on Copaxone, is it possible to update on where your 20 milligram file is?
As we communicated, we have filed the detailed response in the second week of December, and it's gone into review. There is And our response also will have to go in, but that's not the main thing, is the DMF response. And the response will go in by end March or so, and 40 MIG response will follow soon thereafter as well on the ANDA side. But the main thing, the DMF thing, was in the second week of December.
Okay, so what's your expectation of approval both for 20 and 40?
That's a difficult question to answer, Samir. We, as I said, we think we have done a good job. We have good analytical capability. We think we have done a good job. Beyond that, I mean, you know, hopefully things progress in the right direction.
Is it part of your 2015 launches?
Look, I mean, these are complex assets, right? I mean, depending on what questions agency would be asking us, but we, you know, this has been huge amount of scientific man hours which have been put in into this.
Okay, thank you. I have a few more. I'll get back in the queue. Thank you. We'll take the next question from the line of Surya Patra from Philip Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for this opportunity. So I just wanted to think about the gross margin trend that we have seen for the PSI business, which really surprised positively this quarter, despite being the growth of the segment is muted only. The gross margin of that PSI business improved significantly. So any specific reason and how sustainable is that?
I mentioned that CPS business did well this quarter, likely to be generally okay in Q4 as well. You know, some assets, we have done some price adjustments, etc. And I think, and overall, I think PSI business in general, we are trying to make it value accretive, and there are, you know, specific strategic focus on this, not on the size that much, but more on creating more value out of it.
Okay, but this can be a kind of a lumpy nature business as well, right?
Yes and no, not hugely lumpy, but yes, I mean, CPS will have some bit of the thing. Q4 is okay. But yeah, I mean, it's possible Q1 will be a little lean, but a little bit here or there. I can't comment exactly about specific quarters.
So, just one clarification about your initial comments, sir. You commented about two aspects. One is that launch of institutional business launches, something that you said, and also about one supply issue for a partner product that you have indicated. So whether the partner product is an injectable one?
No, it's not. It's not, and it's not partnered. It is our product, manufactured at a partner site, but mid-sized. So, yeah.
And can you comment on that institutional business launches? What you have commented in the initial comments.
Which business launches are
institutional?
Yeah. So we are trying and putting a lot of effort into emerging markets. We opened up Colombia this year, Brazil. Quite a few launches will happen in fiscal 18 in a few months from now, hopefully. And we are opening up a few other markets, Chile, Algeria, Malaysia, etc. And the whole objective is to leverage the institutional portfolio which we have developed, and we have good capability on that. We have good manufacturing capability, and we think we can make this business fairly global. So that's you know, a large strategic initiative on the company. The biosimilars will be add-on to the same front end, and for the next few years, we'll try and sort of grow this business. However, this will not be quarter on quarter so lumpy. It will be gradual build-up, but we feel excited about it as a sustainable business in the long run.
Thank you. We'll take the next question from the line of Karthik Mehta from Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. On your comments on imatinib, you mentioned that you are trying to mitigate by shifting it to some other site. Can you elaborate on this? Because if you would do it now, wouldn't that take a fair amount of time? Or is it on your own site?
We are exploring all options. What I wanted to flag that in the interest of being completely transparent, that we had said it's a Q4 launch. It was all scheduled, but this is an audit which is to a certain extent derailed this, and of an external partner side. So we are exploring whatever options we can do to make it as quick as possible. Difficult to comment at this juncture.
From his question, probably he didn't understand what you said in initial time. Actually, it was originally from our own side, because our side got warning letter, so we did the risk mitigation earlier. So this is what I said earlier.
Swamin, I mean that. So are you expecting your plants to be re-inspected to get an approval for maybe imatinib from your side? Because if you have to mitigate to some other partner, wouldn't you assume that would take at least 2-3 quarters or so? This is pertaining to imatinib only.
Yeah, no, so look, I mean, at the moment, let's focus. We have 3 audits till end March. We're focusing a lot on that, and we'll answer those questions later.
So you have 3 audits in the end of March?
In March, yes. All 3 plants will get audited by end March, yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take the next question from the line of Fatima Pacha from ICICI Prudential. Please go ahead.
So I know a lot of questions on the gross margins. I just wanted to know that is it fair to say that 3Q margins in terms of, you know, all the competition that you've had in, you know, Valsite and Vidaza, that is practically captured in 3Q numbers. So when we will move on, you know, to have launches of Glivec or Aloxi, the margins will build on from this level. Is that how one should look at it?
As I said, you know, there will be new product launches. If it is from in-house, then definitely that's more to margin. But if it is partner, it may not. But at the same time, there are continuous, you know, price erosions and other impacts which will be there. So 59% gross margin, which we achieved in this quarter, is quite a good one. There could be fluctuations. So as I said earlier, in terms of our expectations of gross margin from this unweighted average across all business combined, as long as it is, you know, north of 55, it meets our expectations.
Fair enough, sir. Thanks a lot, sir.
Thank you. We'll take the next question from the line of Chirag Dagli from HDFC Mutual Fund. Please go ahead.
Yes, sir. Thank you for the opportunity. Sir, these 15 products that you alluded to for FY18, I'm assuming these are the biggest launches that we are talking about, or is this like a total number?
No, I said this is a total number, and I also mentioned, someone asked that what is the meaningful part. Hesitantly, I said, you know, like in all companies, maybe 4, maybe 5, I don't know. But we will track those more, but mind you, more complex it gets, more uncertain it gets, right?
Correct.
And that's why Q4, I had originally messaged that we are expecting a few. Now, you know, some of the delays have taken place. So overall, I think there is still, we look forward to next year, but what a little concerned about the delays creeping in into the assets.
So how many of these 4 to 5 are, you know, litigation or site clearance dependent, which is, you know, something which is not in your hands?
So look, I mean, I wouldn't go into too much details, like there's no free lunch in this world, but at the same time, you know, if it is very, very sort of uncertain, I wouldn't mention. But at the same time, there is reasonable level of uncertainty. So, you know, North American business has its own challenges. What is more important is the R&D productivity picking up? Are we still going for the right assets? The answer is yes. Are we putting in those assets and answering the deficiencies properly? The answer is yes. Beyond that, you know, with the channel consolidation, there is no free lunch. There is the plain vanilla products are not earning. Headwinds of erosion is there. And hence, it is important that, you know, we get these through. Beyond that, I wish I knew, I had a better answer to, to your question.
But the 4 and 5 are not litigation dependent or site clearance dependent meaningfully.
Fully clarify those, there could be a few which are not litigation. There could be, maybe one or two which are litigation oriented. So it's a mix.
Sure. And the second one, sir, on in your opening comments, you mentioned that your CAPA is, basically work in progress. So, and still there is an inspection due. How should we think about this? Because your corrective action plan should have already happened, right, before the inspection was scheduled?
I think you got it completely wrong. I said we have put in all CAPAs in place, not just site-specific, but also network-wide, and incorporated third-party reviews and assessments. So I'm again clarifying that to the best of our capability, we have done whatever we believe we are well prepared. So,
Okay. And when is Srikakulam due, sir?
From now to end March, all the three sites will get audited.
Right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. We'll take the next question from the line of Abhishek Sharma from IIFL. Please go ahead.
Hello. Hello.
Yeah, please go ahead.
Sir, just two quick questions. Sorry for the background noise. Sir, out of the 9 filings that you did this quarter, how many of them are your own filings versus partner filings?
Of these 9 are pretty much, most of it are in-house. Eight are in-house.
Yeah, all right. And sir, just one more question. Apart from the 3 facilities which are under warning letter and which are getting inspected, have you got intimation of any of your other major sites which is going to get inspected simultaneously?
No, not at the moment. I mean, sites keep getting audited as we speak, so there is nothing at the moment to report.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you. We'll take the next question from the line of Alok Dalal from CLSA. Please go ahead.
Sir, just to clarify, the 15 launches for FY18 are not linked to the affected sites, right?
Let me check. See, I won't be able to give you all the details of, this is the overall for the year. We are talking about FY18, right?
Yes,
so,
FY18.
So there is, enough de-risking done. There is, most of it, quite a few of it, which, very large portion of it is, which is outside the site. There may be, it's 15 plus, I said. So there may be a few, from the affected sites, but maybe there is parallel activity going on. So overall, you can take it as 15 plus launches, unless there are major, very, very major delays, again, experience.
Okay. And, sir, similarly, if, say, the inspection does not go favorably, are the FY19 launches linked to these sites you've had a chance to de-risk, or it's early to say?
So any de-risking in a normal course is an activity which is, let's say, 9 months, give or take, right? So FY19 is a little far away. That's all I can say at the moment.
Okay, sure. And, sir, one last question. Proprietary products have been stuck in a narrow range for quite a few quarters, despite 2 launches that you had. So why is there no pickup in that particular category?
Anil, you would like to take this question?
Yeah, I will take that question. So as we had communicated in the past quarter, our focus in this fiscal year is to grow the prescriber base as well as overall prescription volume while we work through listing on various insurance managed care formularies. In the second quarter, we implemented a number of strategies to achieve this objective, including refinement of messages, multiple strategic initiatives to improve patient access, etc. So as a result of these interventions, Cernivo prescriptions have grown by approximately 30%. So Cernivo is a dermatology product from 5,500 to 7,000. Also, the prescriber base has grown to about 1,800, and more than half are repeat prescribers. These are all leading indicators to the health of the overall proprietary products business and the thesis of the two products that we've launched. In the case of Zembrace, prescriptions have grown from roughly around 2,000 in the second quarter to about 4,500 in this past quarter, that is Q3. And the number of prescribers have also doubled. As in the case of Cernivo, about half of these are repeat prescribers. So as I said, this the volume growth is what we are right now measuring, because the revenue growth will follow as we get increasing coverage with our insurance. And multiple negotiations are going on with this with these plans. Our objective for FY17 is to get at least 70 to 80% coverage on all commercial insurance plans by the end of the fiscal year. And so starting FY18, we will start seeing the numbers follow these prescription trends. We are also working on other initiatives like minimizing restrictions on some of the plans, including prior authorizations, etc.
Okay. And Anil, how is the pricing here, and how many launches you expect in fiscal 18 in this space?
So fiscal 18, so we expect to have one approval in fiscal 18 in dermatology, and another approval which is pending, tentative, for our pediatrics product that we in-licensed called Zeglyze. It's for treatment of head lice. So those are the two assets that we expect to get approved in FY18. Zeglyze, of course, is contingent on the FDA audit of one of our sites.
Thank you. We'll take the next question from the line of Chirag Talati from Kotak Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my questions. Two questions. Firstly, I'm surprised with your comment on imatinib, because I thought inibs could be manufactured in non-onco facility when one of the existing players on the market is also supplying to a non-onco. So what drove the decision to go to a partnered facility rather than, you know, doing a non-onco facility of your own?
In our view, this should be produced in an oncology facility. But we feel, that's the right practice. And hence we transferred accordingly,
Okay. Secondly, I'm looking at your Aloxi litigation, and I can see that, you've withdrawn one of your invalidation arguments. Does that raise the risk profile in any way, should you still have a favorable decision in the district court in the coming months?
How in no company would be able to answer this. I think June the trial, and we are all waiting on the chances and all that. How can we comment?
What I'm trying to ask is that because you've withdrawn one of your invalidation arguments very recently in order to get an expedited decision from the court. There's still some pending issue on invalidation of one of the claims that will still be left. So,
yes.
What's the trade-off that you're seeing there?
So, we are pursuing the non-infringement case more actively. In any case, the invalidity, all the reasons I can't share. We are keenly awaiting the judgment on non-infringement case.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take the next question from the line of Dheeresh Pathak from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. On proprietary products, to the earlier question, I think you said you want to have 80% coverage, formulary coverage in FY18. How much coverage do you have now?
Right now, our coverage is, I would say, about 50%, and there is some additional coverage, but most of it, there are restrictions on that coverage. So we're working on minimizing those restrictions. So I would say we are about at about half, and we intend to go to about 70 to 80%. That's our goal, based on the trends that in negotiations.
Okay, but in the base business of proprietary products, have you seen some degrowth because these two products added and you have 50% coverage, still we're not seeing numbers? So is there the existing $40 million, I think, which we did in FY16, has that degrown?
That has not degrown, but there are some products that we have deprioritized in order to focus on the new launches. So there was a deliberate measure that we have taken. So, one of our products may not, you can call it a degrowth, based on a deliberate removal of promotional activities and transferring them over to these two assets.
Okay, and last question, in the analyst event in 2015, I think you had guided to about 200 to 300 in FY19. Now that you are going through this journey, you know, of understanding the market formation and other things, is that guidance still hold?
The guidance given in 2015 was based off of certain assumptions that we made on the ever-changing dynamics of the insurance marketplace. We continue to believe in the 200 million, but the specific year is something that we are working on as to when we will get to that $200 million.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. We'll take the next question from the line of Shyam Srinivasan from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my question. Just on the India business, I think in the opening remarks, there was a mention of 3 points. I think one was demonetization. Can you help us actually look through these 3 points? And if possible, can we have some quantification of the impacts of these three?
Yeah, so base adjustments, what I am alluding to, last year, when we do YOY, last year was a pretty heavy Q3. So that is the base adjustment. The second is the demonetization. Yes, it was a little slow for 2-3 weeks and then slowly started picking up, and some companies got more benefit which are chronic heavy. We are not so chronic heavy, but the normalcy have been fully restored. So again, this is not relevant anymore. NLEM, you know about the price reduction. I think this year's cumulative impact 36 crores or something. So 36 crores or so annual impact has come in. So some of these, it's part of the business. Q4, back to normal, we should have normal growth.
Yeah, so when you said it's satisfactory growth, where do we guide on, say, even FY18? Is growth going to come back to where historical rates have been?
Give or take double digit, somewhere between 10 to 15%.
Sure, thank you. My second question is on, I know this speculative at this point of time, on the destination-based tax, especially the import of goods and services into the U.S. If they don't get tax deduction. This is obviously one of the proposals, but any early thoughts on what do you think, the industry can or could lobby if such a proposal actually comes, materializes? Anything, early thoughts that you can share will be great.
No, I will refrain from sharing any early thoughts. Let it first happen, then we will react to respond.
This is what you think. So look, I mean, the generic industry has hugely contributed from 2006 to 2015. You know, the total impact, I'm talking of generic industry as a whole, $1.5 trillion saving in U.S. healthcare costs, okay? And I think that's what, the industry should focus on, and probably the government as well. So I think let's focus on that, what the value generic industry brings into the healthcare costs, okay? And the rest is, how can we comment on?
Thank you. We'll take the next question from the line of Vishal Manchandani from Nirmal Bang. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking my question. I have two. One on your proprietary product business. you have been developing an intranasal migraine spray. So could you share some updates on there? How is the progress happening?
Yeah, the intranasal migraine spray is one of our flagship products for the neurology business. It is progressing well. The program is still in development, and we expect to have some important milestones in FY18. Right now, there is no concern at all about the product.
Okay.
What about the regulatory path specifically?
Safety is validated on the safety front.
Yes, yes. We have finished a safety study and no observations of concern.
Okay. And so should we expect the filing early 2018 calendar year?
I cannot comment on that. As I said, there are some important milestones that we expect to achieve in FY18. But I cannot just comment on the filing date.
Okay. Would you be sharing the final data you achieve on the product this year?
We have some abstracts that have already been published on some of the data that we have generated. A number of publications are due in FY18. So you will see a lot of scientific literature coming out of this. And also patents have been issued. So that's all in public domain. But overall, I must say that the data is looking appealing.
Okay. And just one clarification on Cernivo and Zembre symptoms. I just wanted to understand, why is the volume growth not translating into the revenue growth?
Yeah, as I had mentioned in a previous question, the listing on managed care insurance, right, in the U.S., as you know, a majority of the business comes from insurance, and you have to actually get listed in the formularies of every insurance plan, and that process takes time. So we are right now at about 50% coverage. So while patients may be insured, but they are not covered, we are making the product accessible to them so that they get to experience the product and experience the outcome of that product, the positive outcome, which we are hearing from the field quite a bit about. You know, the feedback has been very good. So while that is happening, we don't want to prevent patients from accessing the drug while we are waiting for their insurance plan to cover our product. So that's why you see the gap between the actual revenue and the prescription. So as I said, prescription growth is important, because once you have patients who experience the drug and want to stay on the drug, we believe that once their insurance plans start covering, they would continue to stay on the drug.
Thank you. Due to time constraints, we will take the last question from the line of Ranjit Kapadia from Centrum Broking. Please go ahead.
So my question relates to DMF filing. We have 782 cumulative filings, and out of which 16 have been filed during the quarter. So how many are getting affected by Srikakulam and Miralaguda?
There are total 16, but one out of that is US DMF. So remaining in other places.
Answer is none. So I mean, we are not filed from these plants. And overall, I think that's not a major issue. That's not a major issue. You know. So.
So if there is a delay in getting the approval, will this what will be the impact on the sales and the profitability?
You know, there are multiple things involved, and I mean, difficult to answer this question. Why don't we do one thing? Let's sort of wait out this quarter. Let's see how we do in the audits. I mean, let's focus on that. I mean, let's look at the positive aspects and see how it goes actually. So, at the moment, I mean, I wouldn't be able to give you a figure on what will happen, etc. You know.
And sir, can you elaborate remedial major cost in the quarter?
Most of the remedial costs we have incurred till the last quarter, so it will not be significant.
Okay. Okay, thank you very much, and wish you all the very best.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, due to time constraints, that was the last question. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Sean McSavla for closing comments.
Hi. Thank you all for joining the call. In case you have any additional clarifications, feel free to reach out to us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Anil, for joining us.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Dr. Reddy's Laboratories Limited, that concludes this conference call for today. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.